Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Henrik, and you are listening to Red Ice Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Well, we're back today with an extra segment on the Paris attacks. I hope you enjoyed our last interview we did with Millennial Woes on this same topic. We also have Guillaume Fay coming up, by the way, for a perspective directly from France to hear more about what kind of impact this event will have. Well, today we're going to touch base with Patrick Lebrun once again. He was with us last time this pretty much happened. He gave us an analysis of the Charlie Hebdo massacre, and this is becoming a regular occurrence now in Europe, the new Europe. Isn't it great? You know, the vibrancy makes all of this so exciting, I can hardly contain myself. Patrick Lebrun is a writer and activist who has written many articles for Countercurrents. He has extensive experience in the French identitarian movement, which makes it perfect to talk about this, by the way. He's currently based in the United States, where he mentors college students and many others who wish to engage in activism. An extra segment coming up. Stay with us. Hey, Patrick Lebrun, welcome back to Red Ice Radio. Thanks so much for coming on short notice. I know that you're outside of a cafe right now. We wanted to get a hold of you, of course, to talk about the latest events in Paris. We spoke in January after the previous big terrorist attack in Paris, and unfortunately we have to gather here for another one now.
Yes, I do hope we talk again under better circumstances, but yeah, I think both of us see the importance of talking about this in a timely way now and addressing the issue that, you know, basically things are coming to a head for our people and our future. And this is just one, sadly, one tragedy that will not be the last.
Absolutely not. This is just the beginning, unfortunately. I'm not really surprised, to be honest. We've been talking about this. Yeah. We knew that it was going to happen. I think we probably even said in the last show, I might be wrong, but I think we probably said, you know, more of this is going to happen, and here we are.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah. And I think that in the English-speaking world, in terms of the news that they get, they don't have as many of the stories reported, but there's been a really steady tempo of terrorist attacks in France. Before the Charlie Hebdo attacks, I'm not sure if we talked about these then or not, but there were some Christmas markets that were attacked by guys just driving their cars into the people there and sometimes jumping out with a knife and stabbing folks. I think that there were three, maybe four such attacks. And Christmas markets, I'm sure you have them up in the Nordic countries as well. It's just temporary little cabins are built in the city square that sell nice things for little gifts,
yeah,
or stocking stuffers, some hot wine, some hot cider. And it's really a wonderful social place in villages and small towns and for people to get together and see each other despite, you know, the cold driving them inside. And it's definitely an implicitly white thing to do, to go to these places. And, you know, no doubt that was a large part. That plus the religious associations, which are very muted in today's Europe, with Christmas. But nonetheless, that was what drove these guys there to attack these innocent bystanders. And I think we can go over overview of these attacks since then. You know, of course, there was the Charlie Hebdo attack, and then a day later, there was the attack on the kosher market in the east of Paris. You know, a little bit later on, there was a, you know, a knife attack by a relative of Koulibaly in the process of him being arrested for questioning, let's say. You know, there was a guy who wanted to kill as many people as he could inside a church in the Paris area. And in the morning of, he killed a young lady who was, you know, just driving around. He carjacked her, and he brutally murdered her. And just so he'd have a car to drive him there to the site of the attack. And then he set the car on fire on his way there. He was, you know, unfortunately he wasn't stopped earlier, but he was stopped before he had the opportunity to shoot the, you know, the parishioners at this mass, which would normally be about 300 people in the building. And there was another one in that happened on April 19th. There was another one in June. There was a guy who was very obviously a very disgruntled worker. He cut the head off of his boss and was
really
tweeting out pictures of himself, selfies holding his boss's head.
Oh my God!
And so you know, I happened to be there in Paris in the days after, and on Paris in Lyon actually, which is the nearest big city, and I went there to interview one of the identitarian leaders of that area, you know, for future translation and fusion. And while I was there, they were in the process of making a banner to go and protest at the site. And I think this was only 2 days afterwards. So they have a really excellent way. We'll talk more about activism later on. But you know, they really are very good at taking news that's fresh and reacting very quickly in an organized way with a controlled message and are slowly presenting an alternative to people. To this barbarism on the hand of the invaders and the foolishness on the side of our so-called leaders. But, you know, looking ahead in July, of course, you know, there was an attack on a military installation in France by three guys. You know, they did not have much success in what they were doing. There's the very famous train incident where a guy tried to take over a this is really a stroke of great luck that you had three ex-military guys there next to this guy when he got out of the bathroom ready to shoot everyone down. Because, I mean, I'm sure you've been on these trains in Europe as well. I mean, these people are sitting ducks.
Oh, yeah. You know. Super tight in there and everything. Can't run anywhere.
Yeah.
But that was three American soldiers, you know, Marines or something,
it was.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, three Americans. Yeah, very, very glad that, you know, there's a spirit of the warrior that's alive still in our people. Of, you know, when they see a problem, their urge is to run towards the danger and fix it, and not to run away from it.
Yeah.
And you know, and we can't forget that. And that's in the end, this is what's going to be. You know, we'll have more and more folks like this, who will be the new elite, the new leadership of our people, and not people who are best at, you know, squeezing, a few extra bits of money out of a hedge fund account or what have you.
Yeah,
you know, which seems to be. Yeah,
we're saying that, you know, calling the Islamic attackers cowards while these politicians are doing nothing, right, and just trying to hide from the problem. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Yay.
Right. Yeah. This the coward insult is one that I think everyone sees through. Because you know, there are a lot of things, but they're not cowards. And
certainly
and
not.
We need, and you're right. The true cowards are the ones who are in control and want to have. They want to have a status quo, and they think they can will it into existence. But you know, it's not. It takes two to tango, but it doesn't take two to have a war. It just takes one to attack.
That's right.
And it's on.
Yeah, you're right.
And also the other thing is, you know, it's you know, the tactics that we have to resort to, sadly, are just to a certain extent dictated by the other party. And so we're going to have to do things that are not things that we like to do to resolve this situation through no fault of our own.
No, because you are in the hands of those. Well, not entirely. That's not entirely true. But my point is that you're limited to the kind of actions of the attackers to a certain extent, because you need to respond to that in a proper way. And that means, you know, you never know when they will strike. And I mean, this is going to be commonplace for many Europeans now. They have to literally watch their back, because this might happen at any time, as we've seen. This might just come out of the blue. You know?
Yeah, you got it. Or as they say in Chicago, don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Right, exactly.
So
that's right,
and that brings us to, you know, to the most recent attack, and of course the you know, this refugee crisis, so called, that's been happening over the summer, and I think people who are regular listeners of Red Ice Radio are well aware of that situation, are well aware of these are mostly men, and mostly not from Syria, and you know, while there is of course. You know, for true refugees, a duty to welcome them in a safe place, you know, the duty to welcome them in a safe place is the next safe country, which would be Lebanon or Turkey or Jordan and maybe even the Gulf states, who haven't taken a single person yet.
That's right, yep.
But, and then as predicted by many people, from, I guess, the most center would be Donald Trump to the most right, kind of folks I hang out with, that, you know, this is the Trojan horse. And now we're seeing the fruits of that. Now we're seeing the soldiers pop out of that Trojan horse. And it's, I think at last count, I mean, I've seen so many different numbers over the past couple days. I think that the most recent is, 119 injured. And frankly, you know, a lot of the people, 129 dead. And of those who are injured, I think 42 remain on the, basically, the border of life and death.
Wow.
And so this is an incredibly serious massacre. It's similar to another tragedy that was ignored in the West, and that was the terrorist attacks in Mumbai. So much like with the Mumbai attacks, in Mumbai they were going from location to location, hopping out of the car, shooting people in open restaurants. And then another team was taking over essentially a captive audience inside of two hotels, I believe, which were the poshest hotels in Mumbai. And, here they were hitting open areas, open cafes, whether the 11th arrondissement or out by the National Stadium. And I think for those who have visited Paris, they've probably flown into Charles de Gaulle, if they're abroad. And then they take the local train in, and they pass through probably the ugliest part of France. And they would see the Stade de France on that trip. And that's where this part of this attack took. Now, it all took place within a 30-minute window, by the way. And of course, not to forget the attack, which was the Bataclan Theater, one of the things that it's still unclear exactly, all the details of this, but chatting with others about this, we were thinking like, wow, they didn't hit any Jewish targets, which is kind of a surprise. Usually there's always one. Even in the Mumbai attack, they went after a very small little kind of a hostel-slash-religious drop-in center in Mumbai, run by the Lubavitch ultra-Orthodox sect of Judaism. But this didn't seem to have that, except some are claiming that Bataclan was mentioned in previous communiques from ISIS because they had hosted events that raised money for Israel.
That's right.
And the previous owners for many years until very recently was a Jewish family. I don't know if this was part of it or if they just thought, okay, metal, obviously, who listens to metal music, right?
Right.
And
exactly.
So they're going to, so.
Well, it's.
They didn't go to a Yannick Noah concert, to kill people, so. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's funny. I had some details about that, too. I think they. Apparently, this is from the Times of Israel, and Jewish owners sold the theater as late as in September. Who knows? Maybe there wasn't knowledge about this, but even, the band had even been in playing in Tel Aviv just earlier this summer and whatnot. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave it to Kevin Barrett to make the link for these things.
Right. Exactly.
But I'll stick with just what I have now. And I think, too, there are two. I mean, essentially, we don't know the details about the people yet. Once again, we have these IDs at the location, which I think at this point, those of us who watch closely kind of like, okay, roll our eyes once again. Who? Don't forget your passports. Kill people, but it's But now, at first, it's like, okay, there's a Syrian passport, and then it's, oh, this is someone else. It's actually someone else's passport, or was it used just to, in case he would be stopped when going from Belgium into France? Was it used to draw a link with ISIS? Was it used? We really don't know. I think the final account yet. But whether we're talking about a team that's entirely composed of French-born or Belgian-born Muslims and Arabs, or we're talking about a team that's entirely guys from Syria or some who came in as refugees and carried the attack, or some mix of the two. Either way, I mean, this is something that breaks the narrative of that Europe is a country of exile for refugees and welcome for refugees, that they're waiting to integrate with us and that their better lives are here and they will become us. Whatever the result is, and I think we can kind of skip over some of the details of this at the moment, but whatever the result is, the conclusion has to be the same, and that is that we need to stop the replacement level immigration. We need to stop this foolish the refugee crisis, so-called, needs to be resolved, not within Europe, but without Europe. And we'll get into the response of the president of France and other responsible parties, to stretch the word responsible.
Mm-hmm.
But it was we're seeing them do essentially a third-generation warfare response to a fourth-generation warfare problem. Because I think that when you think back to, let's say you're Winston Churchill, right, and planes are coming across the channel and bombing your cities. Well, you know, the solution to that's very simple. You know, you bomb the factories that make the planes, right?
Right.
But Raqqa is not a factory that makes jihadists, and blowing up Raqqa, even if it was entirely blown up, or even if Mecca was entirely blown up, would not exhaustively finish the problem. And so this kind of disconnect between third generation response to a fourth generation warfare problem would be as we'll have a bore of soldiers with muskets at the ready at Cliffs of Dover for the next time the planes come. And to us it seems patently absurd. But because fourth generation warfare is still such a new thing, and it's so difficult for state actors to respond to it, that frankly we'll come to realize that bombing Raqqa is just as foolish as that kind of response I described to a third-generation warfare problem.
Right, yeah. Later we can talk about what you think. I mean, obviously, we know what we should do, which is obviously not to have these kinds of societies where people don't raise an eyebrows when there are different cultures within Europe to the extent that they are now, right? So the solution is obviously... the solution is not more multiculturalism, it's less. So we definitely get that, you know?
Precisely, yeah. Now, I'd say, I think just in terms of how our response personally could be, you know, I think of the phrase that the identitarians are using now, which is, pleurer ne pas plier, which is like to cry but to not bend over.
Right.
And that's, yeah, I mean, I think the phrase might be a little bit less vulgar in its French usage, but I mean we get exactly what we're talking about with bending over, because there seems to be a big part of the response to this. But I'll first talk about Hollande, and then talk about the activist response and the general public response, because I think that the silver lining, if you will, of this is that some of the things that we've been calling for are now being put in place by the most likely person, François Hollande. This is that, and I'm just going to read a few quotes from his speech that he gave to the assembly. He said that in Syria we search without compromise a political solution that does not include Bashar al-Assad. Our enemy in Syria is Daesh. Which is okay. That's still part of the old line of thinking that we have to get rid of Assad. Will they stick to that? Who knows? And they're moving an aircraft carrier to the Eastern Mediterranean. But getting to the meat of the subject for us, he said that, quote, "We won't make anyone a stateless person, but we ought to do it for a person who's condemned to acts, even if she was born on soil, as long as she is a dual national." And then later on, dual nationals cannot return to France without passing through a customs control investigation. And so this is a new step forward. And that's something that, I wrote something called the best nationalist pamphlet ever at Countercurrents, which was simply a translation of a document that's a pamphlet that's put out by identitarians with 25 legal innovations or new laws that he put into place that would move us towards remigration. And they're all within the constrictions of the Constitution at this time.
Yeah.
And some of these ideas, and that's one of them. In fact, even before this attack, he had already stripped someone of their citizenships, which is something that's legal in France, though rarely enforced, rarely applied.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He said that also he's going to, and this is almost exactly what was called for by Marine Le Pen, to raise the number of security forces. 10,000 new security jobs, 5,000 new national police, 1 customs officials, and 2.5 prison workers who are mostly focused on intelligence, and a promise to not reduce military personnel through 2019, and increase the activities of reservists. And so this is, you know, I think that that's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, it could be that this be compressed the native population as well. I think that we could expect, you know, if we were talking about Obama or Bush, that we know what their response would be, which would be still invade the world, still invite the world, and take away civil liberties from their citizens.
Right, exactly.
This is a mixed bag, I think, for us, from our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And then his most poetic line was that the regional elections will take place as planned because the rhythms of our democracy will not submit to the terrorist threat.
Yeah, always that.
So we have the regional elections coming up in a couple weeks. And, you know, as I quoted Francois Hollande, he's not going to reschedule these. And, you know, we have to say that this cannot but help the Front National to gain more ground. Earlier in the year, they had the departmental elections in which the Front National gained 25% of the vote, which meant that they kept their gains in the European elections. They maintained 25%. Now, typically for third parties in Europe, they peak during European elections and then drop off afterwards. And so they were the number one party in the European elections. They were the number one party in the departmentals. They're almost certainly going to be the number one party in the regionals and should hopefully gain more power because the structure of the departmentals, even though they had these great results, resulted in very few departments falling to the FN. But we won't have a vote for president until at the latest May 2017. But if you were to look at the schedules for the recent agreement on how to handle the refugee crisis, most of the deliveries of people for processing or after processing to France would occur in the beginning of 2017. And so it would happen with enough time for the social pathologies and perhaps even more terrorism to become clear and would have an impact on the election as well. The response of some of the other leaders as well has been, I think, will also push the populace into the arms of the FN. And that is, I haven't seen this in writing. Someone told me that Manuel Valls, who's the Minister of the Interior, he said that he would seek out an alliance with the Communist Party or maybe the Front de Gauche. I'm not sure which one, which is the...
Really?
Basically like an anti-fascist left party.
Yeah.
And they get about, I don't know, like 6%. He's set up to be the anti-Le Pen. And rather than the Socialist Party and the center-right party taking her on directly and addressing her, he's set up as kind of the guy as the... You know, the gladiator in the ring to go after her.
That's right. Yeah.
And she's done well to avoid that. And frankly, she really is on the class and on the par with the two major parties. Now, the guy who is the alternative to Sarkozy for the center-right party, who's been more or less successful in his city, Bordeaux, and who has... Also, like many senior center-right guys, is a former white-collar criminal. He's been charged and found guilty in the past. Whether he's left white-collar crime behind him is, you know, to be seen, right?
Right, yeah.
But he is preferred by a lot of people for the center-right, and depending on what kind of stranglehold Sarkozy has on his party, which has been renamed... Les Republicans, right? You know,
really? I didn't catch that. Interesting.
Which I think that their backup plan, if that fails, is to rename it Les Lacoudes, I think. we'll see if it comes to that.
That's a good one.
But I don't know. But yeah, Alain Juppé is this guy I'm talking about. Now, he was, I think someone in his party, a lady was saying that, you know, France is a country of the white race and of Europe and of Christian traditions. And this caused a huge polemic. Yeah,
yeah.
Nadine Ohano, you know, which is kind of funny that she has that name, but no, she's a false statistician. She's like a real ethnic French person, and she made this claim, which of course everyone who is a conservative and a leftist has to distance themselves from, and she'll probably soon be kicked out of that party. Better that she also makes statements like that while in that party rather than the FN, because the FN has to be, you know, a bit more careful about these things, I think, and very pragmatic and cautious as they take power. Better not to, you know, have to pay fines like they did under her father, for teaching unpopular historic lessons than just being very practical and speaking power now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's, but yeah, so Juppé said that he would team up with the socialists in a second tour in case of the Front National getting the second tour. Now, the way that I should explain for the listeners who don't know this, that in France, there is a two-step process for elections. There's and they're separated by only 1 week. And so in the first election, you could have anywhere from 2 to 10 parties running, and the two parties which are at the top and most popular will then face each other again the following Sunday. And so, you know, in the first week, we'll have, without a doubt, 10 or 12 for the presidential. And then it could be in the second week either the socialists versus the FN, the socialists versus the center, the Republicans versus the FN, it could be any one of these things, right?
Right.
And so in that, in charge of the center-right party, he will team up with the socialists, which, by the way, this is the most unpopular president in the entire history of the Fifth Republic. I think his...
Really?
Before the Charlie Hebdo attacks, it was like 17% approval, which is...
Wow.
I think it's probably people who work for the party and work for the government, I mean, it's
right.
Pretty soon it'll be like his mother and his barber,
Right.
But, this is the road we're going down. And
yeah,
I think Marine Le Pen, once again, she was very clear in her speech that, it takes both an increase in the security powers as well as going after, the clandestine mosques and those who are preaching hate, as well as kicking out all illegal immigrants from France,
right,
whether they're recent refugees or any other kind.
And that seems less extreme now, Patrick, too, I would assume, considering how extreme the circumstances are.
I would hope so. I would hope so.
Yeah.
But then when I look at the activism that's been happening and I see the response of the crowds, there's still some work to be done. And I think, we have the youth now. Like, that's done. Like, the youth get it for the vast majority of them. There may be some loud SJWs and others who are, sort of cowed into being quiet. But, for the number one party of the youth, the most dynamic activist force for the youth, and then the identitarians, respectively. This would be a good time to transition into talking about the response of the public, because there have been these marches of remembrance and of mourning. Now, part of the state of emergency is that you can't have protests. Now, I really am not clear on exactly what, and this was Hollande's announcement as well, that there wouldn't be protests during this period. However, there are these, mass mourning events, let's say, and now identitarians have gone to these in Lille, which is near to Calais, which I think is the nearest big city to where the jungle is. This is where they all wait around in the forest to sneak across to England.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been in the news quite a bit.
Yep.
And there's actually an amazing video that can be seen from about a year ago when it wasn't the Syrian refugee crisis but the African refugee crisis. And you have these 68ers, these baby boomers, who get food and bring it to these people. And while they're doing it, while the cameras are there, the guys start dumping food out of the cans, and food gets stolen from their car that they're trying to distribute broadly, and it's just total chaos. And the people running it look like such fools.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And you can see the disappointment on the woman's face there. She can't believe it. She just can't comprehend what's happening,
Exactly. I mean, everyone projects. This is just fact. Everyone thinks that other people make decisions the same way they do, that they assess situations the same way they do. And this is just, and when you have, diverse societies, it leads to this kind of confusion.
Yeah.
And so, but in Lille, there are only about 15 identitarians who went to the event there, and they brought a sign that said, "Expel the Islamists," which is precisely what Hollande promised to do. He said that if there are Islamists who are involved in terror or in preaching hatred, he will get rid of them.
Right. Yep.
And this is no different than what the socialist president is proposing. And there was nearly a riot in Lille. I mean, they had over 100 people yelling at them. They were being separated from the crowd by the police. They backed up onto a little raised concrete area and things were being thrown at them, and these, you know, like a baby boomer tried to take a cheap shot at a guy, but his back to him. This is all, you know, can be seen on video. I don't know if anyone was arrested. I'm not sure what happened there. I do know that in Metz, which is in the east of France, there were about 10 who showed up to one of these events. It was only about 50 out of a crowd of 500, though, who went and, let's see, shouted down these protesters. And the police separated them out, waited for about a minute and a half for reinforcements, and they attacked the identitarians with gas, with batons, and then started arresting them. And at the video that I saw towards the end, you can see an Arab in the crowd start spitting on the identitarian while he's on the ground being held down by four police. And so, you know, this is what the forces of order do. I mean, this is what the this is what, I mean, the cops are, they're part of the problem. They serve a state that does not serve their interest or ours. And yes, and in Brittany as well, there was. And it's so, you know, these are protests. Every one of these protests are illegal. You know, the government has said there are no protests. And they have, you know, chosen to practice civil disobedience, to go to these events, and to hold up these signs that simply say, expel Islamists. And they've been met with the harshest response of the state and the hatred of the crowds. And it tells me that for a great number of the population, they have not taken on board the world the facts of the world we live in yet. And they are still in a pre-attack mentality, which was really, I mean, very well illustrated on Veterans Day, on the Remembrance Day, on 11th of November, where outside of Paris, there was a wreath-laying ceremony in a small town. And when the members of the FN, who were part of the city council, went forward to lay their wreath, every other party, every other member, every other person present who was involved in politics and not in the FN, turned their back towards the monument.
Really?
Which is a bizarre, I think that's a pretty bizarre thing to do. I mean, if you're, I can't think of something to compare it to. Like, if there's someone you don't like and you're going to a mass with them and they go to get communion, you turn your back on the altar? Or, I mean,
right.
You, it's hard to think of things that are as extreme as this because they all sound ridiculous. And this is, it's just not a way to behave on a Remembrance Day in front of the Monument of the Dead.
Well, it's good because it makes them look like fools, you know, Patrick. It makes them look like, you know, the haters that they really are. They hate the people of France. They hate the nation and everything. And it's just coming into fruition. It's just coming. It's becoming more visible to the rest of us.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. I guess, you know, what the Greeks would say is that those whom the gods wish to destroy, they first make look ridiculous. And I mean, this is exactly what we're seeing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
So now I want to take the opportunity to let people know about some upcoming events that are in France in case they're listening or if they're nearby. I think your presence would definitely be welcome if you're, you know, on the same level with us, if you feel the same way we do. And frankly, I think apart from the monitors of the state and the ADL and the SPLC listening to us right now, everybody else is going to be on board. And two would be, there's a gathering on the 29th of November of Terre et Peuple, which is Land and People. And that's the group that's run by Pierre Vial, V-I-A-L. And they are a meta-political organization that's existed for many years. Pierre Vial used to be part of GRECE, G-R-E-C-E, the group that was the New Rights group of France. And they're, I guess you'd say, a kind of pagan racial nationalist group. It's very, very worthwhile. It'll be a very nice conference.
Nice.
And on the 8th of December, this will be an outdoor event. This will be marching down the street with flares. I said, even if you can't make it, I'd say people should look on YouTube and watch some of their past events to see just how spectacular they are and try to, if you can, to replicate what they do in your town. It's Lugdunum Suum, and this is in Lyon. And this is put on by the Identitarians. This is the special day of the city. Every year is the 8th of December, and the Identitarians commemorate it in a really spectacular way. So if you're anywhere near there and you want to be with, you know, people who are on the same side, who are proactively doing something, I would highly, highly recommend going to those. But
that's great. Yeah, perfect.
And I'd say the last things too, you know, about these mass showings of sadness. You know, I totally understand why, when confronted with the horror that we're confronted with now, that we would have this need to seek shelter in comforting thoughts. Because facing the horror of what we live with now, what our future holds, is really overwhelming. And frankly, I, you know, preparing for this interview and reading through some of the things in the last year was, you know, it affected me emotionally in a way that I, you know, didn't expect. And
right.
Even, you know, last night, you know, I was at Benton, and a good friend who will know who he is, when we were doing toasts, you know, he did a toast to the martyrs of France. And frankly, I had to choke back the tears. I did not expect that. And I will later express my gratitude to him in person. And, you know, he knows who he is, and I really meant a lot to me. But on Twitter, there was this, you know, the open door, or stranded in America, or stranded in Paris, you know, Belle Trouvert, were all these hashtags that were running. And it was, you know, if you're stuck here and you can't get anywhere, here's a place to stay. And, you know, it really is a great thing that we still have, that we are people who have open hearts, that we live in a high-trust society.
Yes.
And we're seeing that slowly fade away, but, you know, having little reminders that that's who we are, it really is comforting. And so I understand why folks would want to run towards that for comfort in these horrific times, but they need to be shaken out of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that some of the things that are being done, you know, I chatted recently with some people who do a lot of great work in social media, which is not my strength whatsoever. And you know, what's being done now in social media is that the refugees welcome hashtag. It will be refugees welcome and Paris attacks, and then it will be a picture of the carnage. And
that's right.
it's a necessary thing to show this and to make the connection for people who don't want to see it and don't want the connection to be made. And at one of these events in Paris, someone set off a bunch of firecrackers. And, I mean, the panic that ensued, people were jumping into the canal.
Wow.
Near one of the restaurants.
Yep.
They're putting out, you know, I haven't seen any videos of it, but it was just total chaos and panic, naturally.
Of course, yeah, of course. People would think it's just happening again. But see, this is also the typical reaction, though. I mean, people pointed this out, the obvious, but it's like, you know, the reaction from the president. I mean, this is largely ceremonial. You know, now they decide mm-hmm. to do something about the border. You know, now, okay, we're gonna close it now. Now we're meaning business here. You know, and it's I mean, what are they gonna do? Yeah. They're gonna try anything they can to look good, of course. But these are petty attempts and kind of signaling to the masses that, like, yeah, we're dealing with this. If they were honest about this, if they really wanted to deal with the problem, they would at least recognize how this came about. But as we know, Patrick, they won't do that because the agenda here is quite opposite. The agenda is to replace the population of Europe and they seem to want to do it in the most painful way as well, you know?
You got it. Absolutely. Absolutely. And if they see is only a speed bump on the way to that goal, frankly.
Right, exactly.
They'll have to be dragged kicking and screaming to do the things we want them to do, or we'll have to simply take power away from them because they have abrogated the right to rule.
Yeah, that's true. They're not fulfilling the tasks that they've been assigned to do. I think there are many countries, there's still clauses about those kinds of things that a population can actually defend themselves against corrupt leadership and a government which has gone awry, you know?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I just watched the movie, The French Revolution, with my wife. It was filmed in the early 90s. It's available on YouTube for free, actually. And it's in French with English subtitles. I think there are a couple actors that, you know, English speaking people will recognize, Jane Seymour and Sam Neill.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an international cast. It was beautifully filmed. It's like 6 hours long, and it's really it gives a very detailed understanding of how the revolution unrolled and how different factions jostled for power, and then, of course, ending with the terror and then finally the death of Robespierre. But in watching this and watching the actor who played the king, we couldn't help but feel like we were watching President Hollande because he had all the same facial expressions. Though, you know, I heard a a guy say this once on MTV on Bully Beatdown, this phrase. I think it's perfect. He has bitch in his eye. You know? I mean, you just look at him and you just see it. He's got bitch in his eye.
Yeah,
if you watch this, you watch The King and you see Francois Hollande, you think that it's the same guy, you know, that he played this role back then. And I hope, whatever, if he makes that alive or not, but I mean, I think that ultimately he will not be in charge for long. And I guess to end on a couple notes, you know, one is that, so we're being promised that 4 out of the 26 proposed laws from the pamphlet that I mentioned are going to be put into place. I would highly recommend folks look at this, and I can't take credit for this. This was written by the Identitarians and put out in their pamphlet. But it's just a great way to think about what's possible if you're living in a place where, unlike America, I think, the numbers are pretty bleak. But you know, if you're living in a place where you really do have an opportunity, where you have viable political parties, and where you have a demographic situation that's still not too late to turn around, you can take this legal route and introduce these laws. It's the best nationalist pamphlet ever, and it's on countercurrents.com. And have a look at some of the other laws that are being proposed that haven't been put forward yet, and that that may be hopefully one day put into place.
Yeah, I'll definitely add a link to that, by the way, too. I think we reposted it on Red Eyes as well. It's really good, really well written, the whole thing, you know. So
yeah.
Excellent stuff.
Yeah, it really is well done. Yeah. And I think the other thing too is that the night of the attacks, the jungle in Calais, near Lille, which I mentioned is the place that's most packed in France with these illegals, was on fire. I don't know how much it was on fire, but it was a pretty big flame from outside. And there's been regular protests against the presence of the people there. More and more, we're just regular locals getting involved, which is important. You know, we have to expand this movement beyond diehard ideologues and folks who are wearing Charles Martel T-shirts and this kind of thing. They're just regular Joes, who are fed up.
And
bring them in and have them be part of this. And that's happening there. And I know in Germany and a few other places as well, the places where they're supposed to be welcome, they're being burnt down. Now,
yes.
I don't know if it's nationalists doing this, if it's just apolitical but pissed off locals, if it's the... I think I've heard people in America call it the Bubba effect, when you get the, your NASCAR dad, your working class guy who's socially conservative and kind of isn't really involved, suddenly pays attention and gets pissed off, or if it is actually Islamists doing this. It could be them as well. I mean, think about the ANC in the 80s, the African National Congress. They were burning down high schools in the towns where they live because, one, they didn't want people to be able to point to them and say, look what the white man built for you and how much he cares about you.
True. Yeah.
And the other is they got a lot of teenagers out in the streets with nothing to do all day.
Yeah.
So ripe for joining in their orgies of violence to bring about their revolution.
Well, this happens, quite regularly. I think it was the same with some of the churches that was burning in the South after, more recently it was found out it was basically an inside job, if that's the right term for it. But in this case, we know how many pity points actually people receive of trying to look victimized.
Right.
So I think they might as well plan on this. But you know what? I think we've had the same in Sweden a couple, and I think these are people who are basically showing their discontent about what is happening. We don't have any kind of other outlet really to voice our opinions. It's being denied in the mainstream media, and this is what happens,
Yeah, I'm going to say this in a way that I think is within the confines of the law, that whoever is doing it, it doesn't make me unhappy.
Right. Yeah.
And when more of these happen, I'll probably have a little holiday in my heart every time it happens.
And there were, I don't know about all of them in Germany and whatnot, but those that have been burning in Sweden were, they didn't have any people in them. This was just the housing in itself, obviously, that was intended to become, an asylum home, basically. So someone has gotten in there and they've just made sure that this building can't house any more people, basically.
Yeah, I think the more people out there who know this sort of thing is happening, the better. And frankly, it's you know, we live in very desperate times, and you know, the police do not have our back, even if they look like us, and our politicians who look like this absolutely don't have our back if they're in power. It's, and you know, there needs to be a action needs to be done to put an end to this, because the future of our people is at stake. I, you know, I get so sick when I see this stuff about Rotherham and and other similar events. I can't tell you how angry I get.
Same here.
Yeah, and so I, you know, people need to. I think a lot of folks who listen to this, that they're not the ones who are hiding. They're not the ones who are seeking emotional refuge in, you know, these hashtags, #FelfUVouts and whatever. Or ignoring this with you know, sports. In fact, even one thing I forgot to mention: the ultras, the hooligans of Marseille, put up banners in solidarity with Paris, and these were vandalized because if you're these guys are, you know, more to the right, and so if you're to the right, you can't show any solidarity with us. You can't speak. You don't have the right to talk.
No,
right? You don't. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Don't even have the right to stand in public and show that you're sad about this. So, but you know, we're awake listening to this, and we have to turn this anger and sadness into action.
Exactly, something constructive. Now, I know you're busy, Patrick. You have a plane to catch here fairly soon. I wanted to ask you a couple of more things before we let you go.
Sure.
Do you expect? Well, obviously, it kind of answers itself, but let's just kind of touch upon this a bit of what you expect to, like, how things are going to transcribe from here. What's going to happen next, basically? Because if there's much more of this kind of thing to come, people have to be ready for it. Is there any recommendations that you would give to people of what they can do to prepare for something like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think the main thing is to find as best you can other like-minded people to avoid doing anything. Also realize that you're going to be possibly, if someone suggests violence to you in person who you've just met, who just recently joined one of these groups, trying to draw things out of you, they might not have the best intentions.
No, of course, very wary of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if you look at a history of direct action, you see that, you know, usually, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, like Ireland in the 1920s, you know, it'd be like a hurling team who knew each other and played together on the pitch since they were 14, would be the ones who do little platoon for the IRA. And I think there have been many other cases like this later in history where it's, even today actually, it would be a whole soccer team decides, let's all go join ISIS. You know, so usually it's people who have a very strong bond and trust and know each other for many years before such a thing who go down that road. But the there are plenty of options for nonviolent protests and action, and I think that in France that's still a route that's useful. I think there'll be something coming out soon on Countercurrents that I'm working on about constitutional differences between the U.S. and Europe and France in particular. That it's possible if Marine Le Pen is president to do the kind of things we need to see through the referendum process. Whereas if there's a President Trump, he simply can't do the things that need to be done to keep a white majority. I think he just will not have those powers either constitutionally or practically. But, find others like you. And I don't want to lose any friends in the United States over this by saying this, because I know this is a popular route to go down. But I really have the feeling that the survivalist route can be a bit of a cop-out. It's really just another form of white flight, just moving a little bit further beyond the suburbs, and going to the range on the weekends and spending a lot of time shooting. Okay, you know, spend a little bit of time doing that, but it's far more valuable to build social bonds with people and to start doing community action, protests, strategic campaigns with specific objectives. I know that a lot of work is being done right now on universities, both in terms of trolling the activists there, like in Missouri, to overreach and to discredit themselves,
yep,
as well as going, putting pressure on administrators to get rid of anti-white professors. So, you know, there are a lot of options in the U.S. when it comes to that. even more options in Europe when it comes to either mass politics, you know, go join the Sweden Democrats and knock on doors, go join the FN and pass out papers at the market, or it could be go to join the identitarians and jump up on a roof of a building that's being destined to use by gypsies or refugees and doing a protest. Or
that's right.
I mean, they've done some amazing, amazing things. You know, we've covered some of these events at Countercurrents over the past year, where they've taken over roofs and put over banners and made a real impact. And in fact, even I believe it was just a day or two after the train attack, they were there at the train station where he arrived and was arrested in France with the banner on the roof, protesting the failure of the state to protect us from these things.
Nice.
And it took, you know, as usual, it took a couple hours for them to be taken down. So, yeah, there are lots of options for action. There's no reason to just be alone and to feel dejected and feel like there's no hope. You know, there's every reason to think that there's an option, and I really encourage people to go do that, find some others, and play to your strengths as well.
Yeah, exactly. Very well said. I think it's a great opportunity not to try to run away. And frankly, you know, these, you know, the prepper's route, I definitely, while I understand it, I think you're right as well that, you know, we might be able to run a little bit more to a certain few areas, but eventually not that's not going to work in itself either. I mean, this is literally about chasing down the last white person and making sure that, you know, they are diversified. That's what this is about. So we can't, it's better to stand our ground now and take up that fight and organize and do it. And again, it can be done in a peaceful way, right? There's legislation, there are things that can happen, put it within the confines of what's possible. And, you know, kind of, as we said before, Patrick, why not do it in such a way so that the people already that are within the government, let's have them come to our conclusions so that they can become people who advocate for the guests that have come into our country that they need to leave and return to the country where they came from. That would be the simplest solution to all of this, right?
That would be wonderful. That would be, I mean, and already, like we talked about, Holland has implemented, I think, four of these laws, and, you know, he had to be drag kicking and screaming to do it. But there is eventually some of these you know, people in power, a survival instinct will kick in, and they want to maintain their positions. And as soon as there's a shift away from the oligarchs who are controlling the system and who they have to please, to the people, then we'll see this change take place. And they'll see that their survival instincts will put them in our direction and not in the direction of groups like the ADL or or George Soros and his organizations.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well said. One more thing here. Is there anything you want to mention, by the way, about, I know you're working on a kind of a series of interviews with French people to have them basically become accessible to English, the English-speaking audience. Is there anything you want to mention about that?
I've interviewed a number of people, both in activism, in vanguardist activism, as well as in practical politics in France, because I feel like there is a missing piece in the English language of this movement, because it's very easy. It's so easy for us to talk to people, other people in America, other people in Britain, where there have been the fewest successes, and to listen to advice from folks who have had failures. And, you know, it's good to go over failures, but you have to also listen to people who've had success. And I feel like, you know, I can't speak for other countries. I don't know them very well. But with France, there's been some serious progress made. And so, you know, I've interviewed the party leader from Toulon in the south of France. There used to be an FN mayor, and hopefully next time around there will be another FN mayor there. He's been an activist for a very long time. Also a woman who is a volunteer for that same field office. I've interviewed identitarians in Nice, in Paris, and Lyon. I've talked to Roland Helly of the Synthèse Nationale, who's been involved for 40 years. That's actually the first one that we've translated, and I think people will really enjoy that interview, because it's, and I should say this too about every one of these. I think there are about 9 or 10 that I've recorded so far. I've tried to make them really thematic about tactics and organization.
Right.
I said at the outset of each of these, I said, let's not talk about current events, and let's not get talk about ideology, because then I'm going to have 80% of the audience turn off that disagrees with 5% of what we say. You know, we're just going to talk about what have you done that works so that we can repeat what you've done here.
Right.
And the first one with Roland Helly is about unusual alliances. And I think that's a valuable place to start, because we have to work with people who are allies or, you know, associates or what have you, who have a very different worldview than us, or who are shaped by very different experiences that we are, and who have arrived at our conclusions. Because even that, you know, when I talk to a guy who is a former libertarian who has our worldview, you know, we have very different world life experiences, and
right.
very different expectations.
Yep.
And so, you know, ostensibly we're the same now, but you know, there are so many ways to find divisions among people. And he's, over his four decades of activism, had some amazing experiences of building coalitions, and sometimes they're quite amusing, his stories. He's really actually a fantastic guy. I had a lovely Sunday dinner with him on a sunny afternoon in the summertime that someone hosted for us, and he's just a, you know, like a bon vivant, you know. He's like he could drink a whole bottle himself, tell stories all night long if he wanted to, and no one would be, you know, no one would make him stop, you know.
Right. Yep.
But yeah, I think this will be really valuable for activists to listen to, even if you have no interest whatsoever in what happens in France, because it's going to be very, very practical information. So yeah, I really hope that takes off and that a lot of people get access to that, and that's, you know, coming soon.
Exactly, definitely, and we'll make sure to you know, help to promote that on Red Ice as well.
Great.
I definitely want to make sure that gets out to people as well. So heads up on that through Red Ice, and also, of course, you do still write a lot for counter-currents.com, Greg Johnson's site. A lot of good stuff on there still. We'll add a link to that. Anything else, final thoughts, or any last website or something you'd like to give up before we round up?
Yeah, I'd say everybody listening, give more money to Red Ice Radio. And after you do
give
some money to Counter.
Thank you.
yeah. I always get amused when I watch things on YouTube and I see, like, the what was it recently? I don't know who I was watching, but, you know, it's something controversial. And then the ad that pops up in the beginning is, you know, sovereign bonds from Israel.
Right.
It's like these guys are paying for the channel through which I watch this stuff, you know, like, you know, something that they really don't want me to see, and so on. But I was really surprised to hear, I guess I just never noticed before, that you guys don't even monetize YouTube.
So no, we don't. We don't.
I want to just reemphasize to everybody listening, you know, these guys exist only thanks to your donations. They work their asses off, and frankly, like, they deserve it. They deserve you to give them money. And so, you know, please do, and we need to make sure that these voices stay on the air. It's been, I have to say that, you know, these past year and a half, 2 years, has been really pretty magical in the United States, because we've gone from being basically on the sidelines in the InfoWars to being a major voice. And in fact, let me put that, I didn't plan on discussing this today because it's not part of our topic, but I remember hearing a show you did recently, and you mentioned a woman named Melissa Harris Perry,
yeah,
who's on MSNBC. And you know, you shared with me once, I won't mention these numbers here now, but you shared with me once the numbers that you get in terms of listenership, and you may not realize this, but more people in the world get their news every week from Red Ice Radio than Americans watching MSNBC at night.
Wow, that's great news. Awesome.
Yeah, well, people are tuning out.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. And that really gives the lie to, you know, the people who want to make the capitalist argument that, you know, they are not turning towards saying things and doing things that would actually make this a better profit-making venture. They have an agenda that's more important than profit. And, you know, they're willing to make their money elsewhere, fleecing the people on Wall Street or whatever else they're doing to pick your pockets, and to lose money and have a lost leader in the media so they can maintain their power over us. And we all know who we're talking about here when we talk about the media and finance.
Yeah.
But so this is a, this is a really special thing. I'd say as well, you know, folks who, you know, there's a really funny show called The Daily Showa, and I know you did a kind of a mixed show with them recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a very different kind of format, you know, because this is a very serious discussion, and I think, you know, it's highly educational. As even before you were, you know, part of, you know, anywhere near nationalism. I mean, it's always a very educational and serious, informative show. I really, you really are a truth seeker. I mean, that's the thing. I know you use that phrase. It's like,
yeah,
a lot of people use that phrase and they don't mean it. They won't follow it wherever it takes them.
That's true. And, that's true. Yeah.
And the Daily Show is like, I mean, gosh, it's like, I mean, you guys, you'll be having tears come out of your eyes from.
They do great work. It's so important, that aspect, place that they fulfill, and others like them. I mean, there's more coming up, and things are, individual things are popping up on YouTube, different channels that are like, a spin on like doing comedy about everything that's going on. I mean, that's one of the best weapons that we have, I think, in these times.
Absolutely. So, I mean, let's think about it this way. In 2000, I may have my numbers wrong here, but I think it was 2010, 2011, Countercurrents and Alt-Right, I think they both started up around the same time. And then here we are, jump ahead a little bit, and we have you guys, we have the Daily Show. In terms of the steps of taking power and the steps of, if you were to look at the military studies, and I've covered this some in my writing, the steps towards taking over, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years from now, you might have a labor union that's on our side, or you might have a city council, school board that's on our side. And then it's just slowly from there. You know, it's going to be an incremental road to victory, but it's going to take action in the public square. It's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to have to deal with people you don't like, but we can get there, and we are in the process of making progress as it is. So it's despite the terrible tragedy that we just saw in France, the terrible tragedy of Rotherham, and I mean, these we pay attention to because there are so many numbers. The numbers are so high. But there are even more little minor tragedies. I hate to use the word minor, but, you know, one, two people being victimized at the time every day across the white world.
I know.
And so, despite this darkness, there is a countercurrent in this dark age that will be the force that will eventually turn this around and bring us back. So, I just want to thank you again for having me on. And thank all the listeners for, and especially thank the supporters keep you on the air. Once again, everybody, give your money to Red Ice Radio and to other groups, because these guys, they're really doing important work. So.
Well, thank you so much, Patrick, for those encouraging words. And I mean, it's true. I mean, we need to support each other, help each other out, and we invest all our time into this work, and we're doing that for our people for our people's interests, and that's really what this is at. So help. You know, we're not just saying that so that we can, live luxurious lives. We're saying this so that we can reinvest all that ability into helping to grow our media endeavor and turn into more, regular broadcasts or, even more videos and everything. And so that we can become a true competitor with some of the other media outlets out there. So, you're absolutely right. So support each other, help each other out. And, thank you so much again, Patrick. Thank you for your time. And keep up the good work, okay? It's always great speaking with you, and we'll speak soon again,
I'm sure there's lots to talk about, and I hope we'll talk again soon as well.
Well, to us, at this moment, there isn't any other topic that is more important and also more interesting due to the unique circumstances that we find ourselves in than the topic of what is going to happen to Europe, to our mother continent, and also to our people, the dispossessed majority. Within our own countries, no choice, no option, no participation, hence no democracy that they've been pushing so hard in order to transform our societies. Maybe more of the same isn't the way forward. I mean, something has to change. Well, thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to find out more and hear more of what we do, check out the website, redicecreations.com, and if you want to go straight to the radio show, redicereadio.net is the place to go. And then also, as Patrick mentioned, for the full archives for our fans, supporters, and dedicated listeners, and for those who simply want to enjoy and learn from everything that we produced since we started with the radio show in 2006, redicemembers.com is the website for that. So go there, sign up for a membership, it's only €5 per month. We have subscriptions from 3 months up to 2 years available. Well, we have much more coming as well, so stay tuned, folks. Next up is Guillaume Fay for more on the Paris attacks. But for today, we say thank you for listening, and we'll be back before you know it. Take care, spread the word, and we'll talk to you later.